Hi there, this is Dan Digman.
And hi, it's me, Jennifer Digman.
And we're a couple takes on MS. I'm walking.
And I'm rolling.
But together, we're moving forward. And we wanted to use this time to give a little background on us for our podcast, for who we are, where we came from, and why the heck we're here.
Do you remember where you were on September 28th, 2002? That may sound like an arbitrary random date to you, but to me, that's the day that my life changed. You see, I was involved in creating a program intended for women called Finding Your Buried Treasure. And it was intended for women who had lost sight of their hopes, their goals, their dreams after they had received a multiple sclerosis diagnosis. So I was putting together this program. But then on September 28th, when the program was actually going to happen, I was there waiting for people to register and filter in to start the event. And I saw this very cute man walk in. And again, I mentioned it was a program intended for women. So I wondered, who is this cute guy? Whose boyfriend or husband is he?
And I eventually learned that I was the cute man. It turns out that somebody had forgotten to put on the invitations for this Finding Your Buried Treasure, that it was intended for women only. And so what had happened is they started to have men register for it. And I gotten a call from Karen, who was a programs manager for the National MS Society, because I worked with her leading a MS self-help group. And she had asked me if I wanted to go to this event. And it was down in Frankenmuth, Michigan, which is about an hour and a half away from where I was living. But when I looked at my calendar, and it was on a Saturday, and I said, sure, I'll go. And so I went down there. Karen was at the registration table, and as we were talking, she said, now, you see that table right over there? That's Jennifer's table. And you both are younger, and you both have MS, and you guys might have some things to talk about, so why don't you go and sit at that table? And so as I'm sitting there at the table waiting for this Jennifer, I started feeling like a loser because nobody else, there's all these people at the event and they're all talking to people, but this was the table I was supposed to sit at. And all of a sudden, Jennifer rolls up to the table and I said, oh, this is Jennifer. I better bring my A game today.
And so I rolled up to the table. Keep in mind, that was September. I'm pretty sure that I stopped being able to walk on my own. Not that you really have a choice, but it was about May when I started using a scooter. So I was still a little uncomfortable, and meeting a stranger, especially a cute man, was not exactly my comfort level. So I said a quick prayer, and I rolled over to this table where this cute man was sitting with the vice president at the time of the Michigan National MS Society, the chapter of the MS Society, and the keynote speaker for the program that afternoon. And the cute man were sitting at a table with a few other people. And I rolled over and I started to get the day started.
And so I looked and I saw who was at the table, and I was nervous for Jennifer. And so I wanted her to look. I kept looking at her and I wanted her to call on me with questions and things because I wanted to impress her with all the really smart things I had to say. And so the afternoon went really well. And the event's over. It was a really great event. And I was free to leave. I mean, it was a Saturday afternoon in the fall. So granted, I could have got home and watched the second half of the afternoon football games. And I didn't want to wait until the next MS event to see this girl again. And so I was going to stick around and talk to her, and maybe, you know, just so I could guarantee that I'd still stay in touch with her. And so downside is Jennifer's a social butterfly, and so she wouldn't stop talking to people. And so, I was free to leave, but I sat there and I started to like help people clean up, pick up. So I'm breaking down tables and packing up boxes and stacking chairs. And I kept looking over at Jennifer and she just kept talking to more people. finally she was alone. And so I went up, we started talking, and I didn't want to be over the top. And so I just said, could I get your email?
And of course I was super excited. And I gave Dan my phone number. I gave him my email address, but I also slipped him my phone number because I didn't want this to be the last event. Now, keep in mind, Dan had driven about an hour and a half to go to the event, but I had driven about 45 minutes. And I had never seen Dan before, and I had been living with multiple sclerosis for, gosh, you know, maybe 10 years?
That's probably only like 5 years.
Gracious. I'm getting old, man. Yes. Time does fly. So I didn't want that to be the last time. And so I gave him my phone number. And that was, we left the event.
Yeah, we did. I mean, that's the whole thing is we left the event. That was on a Saturday, of course. And then I get home and I'm like, I'm thinking, well, who is this Jennifer? And then you get all creepy and stuff. I just wanted to know more about her. And so one thing that we had talked about on that afternoon was apparently she had a fantasy football league team too.
Absolutely.
Yes. Fortunate for me, her quarterback at the time was Aaron Brooks, and he was a quarterback for New Orleans. And fortunately, on that Sunday, the Saints were playing our beloved Detroit Lions. So I did not care what happened to the Lions. I paid all the attention in the world to Aaron Brooks and how did he perform that day, because I needed to have an excuse and something to talk about with this Jennifer. And so the game's over, and mind you, I'm a professional writer. I write for a living. I went into my office, turned on the computer, and I sat there because I had her email, and it took me 3 hours to write a 5-sentence email, because you're just like, what do you say? Because I wanted to leave things open to have more conversations, but not be so over the top that I would scare her off. And so edited, re-edited, and I hit send and hoped I'd said all the right things.
And you did, of course. I was super excited that I had an email from Dan. Boy, I feel super old saying email, but that was a long time ago. But I did get in contact with Dan, and I was excited.
Why didn't I frame that email?
I don't know. That would have been really sweet. Kind of creepy now.
What you said to me.
We just started talking, like back and forth, talking. I'm air quoting. The emails back and forth. And then I'm weak on my left side. Well, back then I was weak on my left side, and typing was difficult. So one day that I was particularly worn out, as multiple sclerosis has the ability to do, I just typed Dan 5 little words. Why don't you call me? And I pushed send on my computer, and I hoped that you would call me, and thank heavens you did.
And that's like everything that a man hopes for. I mean, and mind you, so I called you, and it just took off from there. I mean, it was just, and I mean, granted, at this point in time, I mean, back in the day, back in 2002, we were on landlines, and we had to wait until 9 o'clock at night because Jennifer had free nights and weekends.
God love that plan. So free nights and weekends, and so I would wait until 9 o'clock so that Dan and I could talk for Brianna, my old flip phone, and we would talk for probably near 2 hours.
Yeah.
And we really got to know each other. And then before you knew it, we were kind of dating, as much as we could date with 150 miles or 105 miles.
It was 101.3. 101.3 miles. Well, because once we started dating, I would go down to, because you lived with your parents.
I did at that time.
And because, you graduated from college and you had a job.
I had a job and I lived in Detroit, and I started my MS, I was diagnosed with MS, and then it was rather aggressive. My goodness, I haven't thought about that in a while. But my MS progressed rather quickly, and I moved back in with my parents in the Flint area. And so I was living with them, and Dan would drive down and spend weekends with me. And we started dating, and
it was so then Friday, Thursday nights, I would pack up my little suitcase and have that ready to go. So when I got out of work at 5, boom, I'm on the road to Grand Blanc, and 101.3 miles. I could usually get there in an hour and 40 minutes. And so we did that, and probably about 3 months or so after we started dating, but we started talking about marriage.
Yes, because we knew pretty quickly on, this is the man I want to marry.
Well, because I think that's what was going through my head was just that, because we met on that Saturday at Finding Your Buried Treasure, and I went into work that Monday morning, and Stacy, my coworker, who is a guy, I always had to, had to explain that to my dad. But Stacy and he had said, how was your weekend? And I said, Stacy, I met the woman I'm going to marry, and you're going to be the best man at our wedding. I mean, I just had all the highest of hopes that one day we would be a couple and we would be together. And so, I pretty well knew the day I met you that this was the real deal.
And I'm a little slower on the uptake, but once we started getting to know each other and making those nights and weekend phone calls, and then you would come down to Grand Blanc and visit, about 3 months into the relationship, it was pretty apparent
that... Well, then you start talking in hypotheticals, mm-hmm. Because it's just we're two people with MS. I mean, I was diagnosed in 2000. So I'd only been diagnosed for a couple of years before we met.
Yeah.
But then how would you make a relationship, let alone a wedding,
marriage.
Work with two people with MS? And so it's hypothetically, if we got married, where would we live?
And I wondered the interesting questions, of course, that women think about is, hypothetically, what would an engagement ring look like if you ask me? But hypothetically, of course, where would we live and how would we do this? Because I was, as I said, pretty newly using a wheelchair, and I just couldn't imagine how Dan, a person living with multiple sclerosis, could and would want to have a relationship with another person with MS. But we made it happen, and I learned about the Michigan Medicaid waiver program. I had a physical therapist who told me that this hypothetical could work. We could actually have a marriage, and I was so worried when we were dating that hypothetically Dan and I were going to have to live in my parents' basement. Boy, I forgot about that. I was just thinking there's no way that I'm ever going to move out of my parents' home. There's no way that two people with multiple sclerosis could have a real relationship and a real marriage. But I learned about that program that would help us make it happen. And
that's really kind of the thing that pushed everything over the edge, was just when you found out about that program, then that you would have a caregiver here at the house during the day to help you with activities of daily living,
so that you could continue working full time and have your job, and I would be okay to be on my own. And as on my own, I could do things to help our household, shop for groceries, do laundry, things like that, and continue living as a normal married couple. So with the Medicaid waiver program, Dan and I felt comfortable moving forward.
Yeah, it was October 23rd, 2004.
Yes.
Yes. Look at me go. October 23rd, 2004. I asked Jennifer to marry me, and
of course, I
said yes. She said yes.
Of course.
Then, of course, you're looking, well, where would we live? Obviously, you know, moving to Mount Pleasant, well, what would we do? And I, honest to God, had been looking around thinking, we're going to have to build brand new. I mean, because we need a house with ramps, a house with, you know, wide doors, a house with a roll-in shower and everything. Unfortunately, one day, I worked at Central Michigan University at the time. Coming out of work, and the sports director, the sports information director at Central, was asking me about my girlfriend. And I was like, "Oh, well, Fred, didn't you know we got engaged?" And he was just like asking, like, "Well, where are you guys gonna live?" And I told him, you know, pretty much I didn't know. And he says, "We don't have to build new, Dan. There's a house right across the street for me that has everything you're looking for." And I came over and looked at it, and this used to be a group home, and it truly had everything. I mean, ramps, deck, you know, wide doors, roll-in shower, and it was close to my office. I mean, it was like 5 minutes away. And
so it was totally a moment and just a blessing. But it's things that people need to think about when you're thinking about a future with a person using a wheelchair. That there needs to be ramps, like you said, that are really important. And a roll-in shower is uber helpful if you can find one, or you can put one in your own house. The wide doorways have been a blessing. So when you found that, we felt confident to move forward. And my parents, who didn't want me to live in their basement either, much to my dad's chagrin, we got married. And we made this happen.
And see, and I couldn't remember specifically. I had like pause for a moment, like the day I asked you to marry me. But yeah, we got married on September 10th, 2005. And so.
And that was perfect. And that goes by really fast. If you're planning a wedding, just know that your wedding is going to go really fast. So enjoy it. Stop stressing. Calm down. Enjoy the day. It will go wonderfully. And just believe that. And so Dan and I got married. We went on a wonderful honeymoon to Toronto, which was a super handicap accessible city, and showed us that there was a future where we could do this. And Dan and I married and moved into our house. And we're very, very, very lucky that we met some incredible people quite early in our marriage, and just we've really been blessed and lucky that we have made this work.
And I think, you know, blessed and lucky, but I think just determined. I think that's just where
determined. And Dan, you do so much hard work. You're probably like, yeah, it's a blessing and everything, but I work my butt off because you are my number one primary caregiver.
But ditto. I mean, you're my number one primary caregiver, and I think that's the misconception to think that, oh, you're in a wheelchair and I help you. But it's just like you commented earlier, you know, that you do the shopping, you know, you and your caregiver, and you clean the house, you do the cooking. I mean, that's, and I this isn't like me saying I don't need to do the cooking, or, you know, I like to cook and I like to clean, but it's just that with that help that what you guys do during the day while I'm working, then when I get done with work, I can focus on taking care of you and focus on taking care of myself.
I know that's an important thing to remember. It's not only do I have multiple sclerosis, but you're also living with the disease. And so that's how we have made this work. And on the day I met you, I can't let it go without saying, you were cleaning up tables and boxes while I was chatting away. And that's been one of the things that you've carried in with this marriage. You're always there, you know, cleaning up our messes. And that's just that common thing that, you know.
Well, and I think that's just what, I mean, that's what we do. I think that's where, you know, it's something where people, you talk about in sickness and health. And I mean, that's a whole thing, like with you know, marriage vows and stuff. I think that, you know, those that we went into this relationship, both of us having MS, it's almost like our vows should have been together in sickness and in sickness. But I think it's just that those are the things that it's just like, you know, because it was 5 days after we got home from after we'd been married, thought we were going to, you had given me the okay to file for an annulment.
And that's a story for another day. And no, I mean, well, just, you know, we got married, we went to Toronto, and driving, because we did not want to fly, because that's, again, something we can talk about someday, is just traveling with a wheelchair. But back then we could just put the wheelchair in the car and truck ourselves up to Toronto. But it was exhausting, and we got back and we're in our beautiful house, our handicap accessible house, and Dan's transferring me in the restroom, and the transfer didn't go smoothly,
to say the least.
Jinx. And I was laying sprawled out on the bathroom floor 5 days after my honeymoon, or 5 days after I married you. Just, oh shoot, you know, how is this gonna work if we're brand new newlyweds and my husband, I'm laying on the floor. Are you sure that this is what you want?
Well, so it's like, that's something that was a total shock to me, was just that, you know, here is my new wife and I drop her on the floor, and, you know, and then
to be honest, you never really like fully dropped me. I'm very, I just want to say, like, it's a slow letdown.
It's a slow letdown, you're, but like, at the same time, I mean, it is the drama of it. I mean, it's just like, it could have been the slowest of letdowns, but at the same time, when you're the one that's put in charge of, you know, making sure it's your strength that's there to do the transfer, and you're on the floor, that, you know, and you feel that's all on me. And so, of course, then, I'm not going to lie, you know, I'm dropping F-bombs like it's nobody's business. Mm-hmm. And I think that was the lesson learned, that it's just like, you know, I wasn't mad at you. And it's just like, that's where the communication came in. It's just like, it's not you, it's the disease, it's me. And so,
but I'm the one sitting on the floor, laying on the floor, if we want to be dramatic. And I'm in tears, and I'm thinking, oh my God, what have I done to this man that I love? And I remember just laying there, again, tears, and just saying, if you want to get this marriage annulled, I'm sure that there's enough time.
The paint's not dry. We can, you know, 5 second rule.
Exactly, 5 second rule, and we don't have to go on with this. And you right there cemented, like, get that thought out of your head. We made these vows, and we made this commitment, and we're in it for the long haul. And if you can say that 5 days after we've married, when I'm laying on the bathroom floor, I knew then that we had a future together.
That's how the story started. What happened with us is just, that's how we got into advocacy, through the My Choice Waiver program. We really started getting active with that in terms of going down and approaching our state legislators for funding for the My Choice program, because that's critical to our marriage, and that's how we got involved with advocacy.
I think we got that way, but advocacy is under the broad umbrella that includes fundraising as well. We would go on, we would participate in MS walks, and we would try and increase awareness about multiple sclerosis. I often tell people, I'm going to talk about this disease so much, you will cure it just to shut me up. Because, you know, and that was like one of our big advocacy efforts, is that we wanted to raise money to find new treatments, to find a cure for MS. And the natural, like, progression is advocacy, where we could use our voice and be informed about the issues. And one of the issues that was easy enough for us to talk about was the Medicaid waiver program. Wouldn't you agree?
I totally agree. And I think that that's what with it, you know, you see that. I think back to when I was first diagnosed on Valentine's Day 2000, that there weren't, at least at that point, to what I saw, a lot of positive male voices living with the disease. I mean, the fact that the proportion that's like, was it 2/3 as many females as males have MS? And I didn't want to have the woe is me, because I mean, obviously, yeah, the disease sucks. I mean, let's call it what it is.
It's a challenging disease. There is no way to sugarcoat it. Yeah, the disease sucks.
And I wanted it to be positive. I wanted to give people some like encouragement to say that, yes, you can go on, you can keep doing, you can keep living. And so when you and I got married, and that's when I had talked to our friend Cynthia, just saying, you know, we want to get our voices out there because there's more to life than just the disease. I mean, the disease is not going to end us. It's how do we keep it started? I'm like, you know, I still have the same job that I had when I was diagnosed. Jennifer, we got married and we both had MS. How do we keep that going?
Not only did we both have MS, but I was in the dreaded wheelchair. Oh my God.
You were in a wheelchair? What?
That hideous person in the wheelchair. Or not that any person that uses a wheelchair is hideous. It's just like, don't hide us in the corner. You need to see us so that you can pay attention to us, so that you can see yourself if, heaven forbid, you need to use a wheelchair. And so we didn't want to hide that away. And I think it's easy for people when their multiple sclerosis progresses or when they're newly diagnosed to just keep it to themselves. But we wanted to be open and share our story. And again, thank heavens for Cynthia that she helped us put together a blog. And the natural fit for us was just to blog about our experiences, share our stories of living with multiple sclerosis.
As a way then to help people to feel connected and just be, because people need to, when you're first diagnosed, you want to like shut yourself off, but it's like, the key is to get yourself out there to find other people, because then, you know, with MS being an isolating disease, seemingly, you need to make connections. And we wanted to help use our blog, our voices, to help people make connections, connect with us, to connect with others. And I think now, you know, so with Cynthia, she encouraged us to do the blog. And now the nice thing is there's so many like virtual communities. There's so many, like, you know, social media, Facebook.
And just actual, like, pharmaceutical companies that have put together ways to stay connected, you know. And then there are apps on your phone and just other ways to stay connected, because I think that's the most important. Not let the disease isolate you, like you said, that it is an isolating disease. And we've been lucky, and we decided, we, of course, wanted to start sharing our stories because typing can be a challenge. And let's be honest, you've been living with the disease for 21 years and you work full time and you're my primary caregiver. So there's only so much energy, and typing can be difficult. Writing can be difficult, but sharing your story and organizing your thoughts, that when you chicken scratch, write things down and you want to talk about them and you want to hear from other people, this was a natural fit for us to start a podcast.
I think because that way you think of how stories are shared, how the stories are told. And it's just like the thought of having to sit down and actually read. I mean, people have that, but they only have so much time. But it's just like, it doesn't take much to just start playing a podcast and you pick up everything from there. And you can do that while you're cleaning, while you're cooking. And we've been talking about doing a podcast for at least a year.
Yeah, for a little while.
And so then enter Ryan Yvonne, who we met Ryan when we were doing, you know, sharing our story. And he was pivotal in helping to share our story when he was a photographer here at the Morning Sun. And he had approached us
to
do a photo story on us, and we just got to be good friends with Ryan, and he had approached us, and he really spoke our language to make our thoughts come
true. To make this happen.
Yeah, because we're just like, because I didn't even know where to start with a podcast.
It can be a little daunting.
Yeah, yeah. And so when you approached us, I'm like, Ryan, how did you know?
I'm psychic.
Exactly.
And it's very comforting. You know, we always tell people to not be isolated, to not be alone in this. Maybe it's a little overused phrase, but don't be alone in this journey. While we're doing a podcast and we have someone who's a natural fit and someone we've known for, oh good heavens, since that infamous ice cream sandwich, almost like what?
Yeah. Telling what inside jokes that people don't understand yet.
Yeah. Well, and I think, because we have the photo story you did for us framed in the other room.
I saw that. I met Dan first, right?
Yeah, I believe so, yeah.
Because we were doing a story just about you having MS and running the crim, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. God, yeah.
And I just like, oh, that's cool. That'll be fun. And then I started shooting you, and then I met Jen. I'm like, there's a huge story
There's
here.
Two of them.
It's just like the fact it's like a married couple both having a disease and you have like opposite ends of it. It's just as a storyteller, I'm just like, that's insane. Like, this is a movie. Like, you guys did this on purpose, right? It's a trick.
Totally.
And then one of the interesting things that I think about both Ryan and Dan is you're both introverts. You can be quiet. And
must be quiet.
And yes. You must both be quiet, but I am talkative, as Dan alluded to earlier. And I come by this honestly enough. My mom is the same way. We're pushers. Mm-hmm. And we had ice cream sandwiches at our house. And Ryan is like the first day I've ever met the man. I'm like, stay, have an ice cream sandwich with us. Like, just here. And finally, I broke him down. He ate ice cream sandwich. And ever since, we've been friends.
And every time I go into Meijer or something and see those skinny cow ice cream sandwiches, my mind just goes right back to it.
Yes. And that's what it was.
Well, I saw you being the journalist. Oh, you don't take gifts from people. We're not trying to. Yeah. But it's just like, dude, we're fine. And I think it's. And that's the interesting thing then, because we had asked Ryan when we needed some other photos to go with our blog and everything. He came over to take some photos, and it ended up, it wasn't even a photo he shot for us to use. It was just like kind of the editor's cuts, just because we didn't even know he was shooting a photo, but he shot this picture of us, and it was like such a classic shot that's the photo we chose to be on the cover of the book we wrote.
Yeah, it's your guys'
10 years ago.
Feet under the table, right?
No, it's the picture.
Oh, the goofy one, right?
Yeah. I couldn't remember because I remember
the feet ones
in
the book too, right?
Yeah. Is that on the back cover? Yeah, I was going to say that's on the back cover, but the cover was just you were adjusting.
Superstar over here, I got both sides of the book.
What's up? Good job.
Well, because, you were adjusting light or something. We thought you were futzing with your camera, so we're just like, oh, and we were just kind of talking, and you just have to snap that photo. Mm-hmm. But it's just like, and that's why you never know, like, how you're going to find people, how you're going to make connections and make the friendships. I mean, that it's been,
So I followed you guys for over a year doing that story. Like, that was
absolutely
usually in my free time, and the end of it worked out perfectly because then we published it just before that big walk in Frankenmuth.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it was.
Yeah.
And you guys are just so damn polite and nice to be around.
Thank you.
Staying for dinner, right?
Yeah. But that's one of those funny things. I mean, Dan and I, we sound like we're so polite and nice, and we are, but
generally this pleasant to be around the time.
Thank you, but it's one of those things, like, we have our moments just like everybody else, and it's just we don't want to live in those moments. And it's really easy, you know. We were diagnosed when we were young, and we could have just, like, turned inward, but we didn't. We were like, there's still so much to happen. And just imagine if we hadn't gone to that program years ago, everything we would have missed out on.
And the opportunities and everything. And, I mean, because what if I wouldn't have gone to the buried treasure? What if I would have stayed in town?
What if somebody would have written out the sheet right? That's like, oh, for women only.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or what if you would have been like, okay, that woman's not going to shut up. I'm just going to go home. I have better things
well,
to
do. Well, yeah, I'm just like, well, I think, yeah, because I think Michigan kicked off at 3:30. And it's like, I got to go. But this woman.
Yeah. So, I mean, things work right.
Sacrifices must be made.
Exactly. I'll catch this highlights on ESPN SportsCenter.
There you go.
Yeah. So no, this, and so this, I'm very, very excited here. And this is just, to be able to do this, I mean, because I don't understand, I don't know the technology. I mean, and I'm too, I don't know, lazy or whatever. I'm just thinking it's just,
I think you're a little overextended already. So producing a podcast is just one more thing you'd have to carry around.
And yeah, and it's just, yeah.
That's the thing, easy enough. If you have the knowledge, like just, you know.
Yeah, thank heavens you have the knowledge and you had the foresight to do it. And so this will be good.
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah, so I know, hopefully it's, you know, it takes, hopefully it just connects with people.
Yeah,
that's one thing. It's just like,
and you have to think it's going to resonate, knowing that there are nearly 1 million Americans living with multiple sclerosis. Oh, wow. And so that is, since I've been diagnosed, I have not interacted with anyone. I feel fairly confident saying that doesn't know somebody living with MS personally or isn't aware of it. And now you can look at, oh, well, Jack Osborne has MS or Selma Blair, you know, Richard Pryor. Back in our day, it was Terry Garr.
I didn't know Terry Garr had MS.
Yeah, it's so prevalent. See, like
such
that.
Such a crush on her. Oh. I had a crush on some weird people when I was a kid.
No,
that's for a different podcast.
Yeah, but it's
childhood crushes. Making middle note.
Yeah, her and Madeline Kahn.
Madeline Kahn. That's interesting.
And like basically any comedic woman in that time frame, like Bernadette Peters. I still have a huge crush on Bernadette Peters. Oh, I can't help it.
No, that I can understand. But it is, you know, there's nearly a million of us. And that's what's so funny is when I was diagnosed, the first drug that I took, or one of the first drugs I took, I had to get financial help because multiple sclerosis is not a cheap disease to live with. But I had to get financial assistance. And I remember filling out a form for an orphan drug. Or not an orphan drug, it was like an orphan disease. And now there's nearly a million of us living within the United States.
Just in the U.S. I mean, think of, you know, and I think of like all the connections I have on Twitter and everything that are in the U.K. and
India, Canada.
Totally worldwide. And so, you know, hopefully, like I say, it's just like just being part of that, having the voices, having the stories, just to help people make the connections or, you know, that they have a place to turn to.
Right. Yeah. I mean, just like being an outsider to the disease, like just knowing what I know about it just purely through knowing you guys, like I didn't know anybody beforehand who like had MS. I don't think I've met anybody since then that has. And it's one of those things, like while I was in Texas, there was the MS bike ride in Houston and I'm just like, oh cool, I'm gonna do that. And like, I'm down here, might as well. And then there was a walk in Austin. It's like, cool, might as well do that.
Yeah.
Even if I'm just standing around taking pictures and throwing them out to people later, it's like, it's, you know, it's being there and letting, I don't know, I like that it's like, hey, I see you.
Yep. And it is, it's one of those diseases that changes you once you're diagnosed. I imagine any disease changes a person, but this is, you're in it for the long haul. Once you get diagnosed, you have to accept and incorporate it in your life, and that's kind of why we wanted to do this podcast, so that others could share their stories with us or their experiences with us, because you can't stop learning about the disease and we can't stop sharing and talking about it.
Yeah, I think it's just because it's a progressive disease, so it's going to continue to change, and that's every day is a new challenge, a new opportunity.
I like the way you framed that. That was nice, Dan.
Thank you. Thank you. And so that's where we're going with this. And this is why we're so excited to be here to share our stories, to share our experiences, to help, you know, educate, entertain, inspire, whatever the words. I mean, even if it makes you angry, you know,
it gets you thinking.
It gets you talking, gets you in the conversation. And so we really hope that you will continue to check back with us. Continue to follow us, you know, for the podcast, and follow us on our website is acoupletakesonms.com. And that is where our stories, our essays, the work we're doing will be highlighted. And of course, that's where we will highlight and give you directions to connect to the podcast. I always tell people that, you know, I don't feel like my life began until after I was diagnosed with MS, until after I met Jennifer. It's like, you know, you find a new way to move, a new way to focus your life and move forward. And so, again, this isn't all sunshine and rainbows and everything. It's just a way to help you move forward, you know, through the challenges that you face. And I think that's the one thing. Just continue to not give MS more credit than it deserves.
Find out more about us on our website, acoupletakesonms.com.
And be sure to check back, and we will have another episode in a couple weeks.